Hello, everyone. This is episode 25 of the iPhone podcast. I'm your host, Gary Ng, and I'm also alongside here, Justin Louie. We're here to bring you the latest iPhone OS news, app reviews, and just anything happening in the world of Apple. Hey, Justin, how are you doing today?
Very good. 2 weeks in a row that we're recording on time, so our New Year's resolution is intact.
Yep, so after this episode, we'll be on another 6-month break, and readers can look forward to talking to us in the summer. But let's get started. Just a few news stories here today that caught our eye. Apple has apparently had a change in their App Store policy regarding in-app purchases and subscriptions. There was a story that was made in the New York Times talking about how Sony's reader app was declined and just rejected from the App Store. And the reason was because Sony had, I guess, created the app so that in-app purchases weren't going through Apple. And apparently Apple is making a change to this right now.
Yeah, well, they claim they're not making a change. They're saying it was always their policy, and they're just enforcing it now. This is going to get interesting in a hurry. Apple, from the beginning, as soon as they allowed in-app purchases, they wanted people to do it that way. If you're a conspiracy theorist, you can just say, hey, that's just them being greedy, and they want 30% of everything. If you look from the other standpoint, it does make the user experience better, which Apple is all about. Then the Kindle app was the first kind of big one to say, hey, we don't want to give up 30% on every purchase, so you just have to go out to the web and buy it that way, which was never a really big deal. Kindle handled it really well, and I can totally see it from the Amazon point of view. So now it sounds like Apple is saying you can sell it outside as long as you also make it available as an in-app purchase. But if you don't make it as an in-app purchase, then you can't have people import content they already bought. And I think that's a big mistake from Apple, because people want to be able to, like, I own that content. I want to be able to kind of use it however I want. So that's one way that I don't agree with Apple. But from the other standpoint, I do see what they're saying, because a lot of people just want to go out and buy an Apple gift card and be able to buy things. And I know even family members have kind of said to me, when it comes to the Kindle or other things, oh, well, can't I just pay for that with my iTunes account? So you can see why Apple wants to do it. Not only do they get their 30 cents, but it's a better experience. So what I'm hoping Apple does is say, hey, you can sell it outside or inside, but you have to, if they do decide to make it that you have to buy it within the app, then they shouldn't make people match prices. So in other words, maybe it's $12 for a book through the iPhone, or if you want to go out to Amazon and buy it the other way, if they can charge a little less price to make up for that 30%, then I would have no problem with that. That way Apple's getting what they want. It's a unified experience, but someone like Amazon, who's only making 30% as it is, can't really afford to give Apple a 30 cent. So it's interesting, and we'll see, I think, within the next few months how this all shakes out, but I'm hoping it works out the way I just said, that at least if they don't try to control the pricing, then it really shouldn't be an issue to do it that way.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well. I mean, Apple was quick to respond officially to this. I mean, I think myself included, a whole bunch of other blogs just really ran with this story. Apple got back to Digital Daily from All Things Daily and told them that they haven't changed anything. Like you said, they're just going to require that if an app offers, you know, the ability to purchase books outside, the same option is also going to be available for customers from within the app too. But I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they, you know, if the other existing ebook apps, such as the Kindle app or the Amazon Reader app, will have to change it up because of this new policy. So that's something we'll have to wait and see on. Next up, we have a report here that talks about Apple's market share and profits. The iPhone has 4% of the market share, 20% of the industry revenue, and 50% of profits, which is phenomenal for just, I mean, Apple's one phone per year model right now.
Yeah, this one story, I don't think we need to go into much detail. We've got into the kind of the economic side of the iPhone several times in recent episodes. The interesting thing was that this report came out a day or two after we learned that Android had actually passed Apple in overall market share worldwide. So I guess the news here is Apple will keep letting Android surpass it in terms of market share if they can keep grabbing 50% of the profits and only 4% of the market. That's math that I think all of us would like to have in our personal businesses.
Yes, most definitely. Next up here, this is an iPad story. News Corp, they've been pushing this. Their iPad-only newspaper, The Daily, launched yesterday. Subscription prices worked out to 14 cents a day, or 99 cents a week, or $40 a year. There's no, right now the app is only available in the US iTunes store. However, I was able to get a confirmation from their PR team that they do have plans for Canada, but obviously they didn't share their timeline. I was able to download the app to my iPad yesterday, and I did check it out. There's a lot of content on there. It's just enough to give you sort of a good read, but some of the content is a bit short. In terms of navigating the app, I found it was pretty nice, but it did seem a little chunky at times to try to stop on a certain page. But it was very innovative because you could just rotate the iPad into landscape and you could see images on a story, and then portrait mode would be the article. So I think it's not bad for an initial release, and the pricing is very, very cheap.
Yes, we'll be following the story. I'm very interested to see how this all plays out. I was able to read and view a lot of the content on their website and, of course, watched all the demo videos. I haven't had a chance to try out the app. What they're trying to do with the app in the videos, it looks really great, but I've heard a lot of people report what you were saying, that it's quite not ready for prime time. It's a little clunky in certain areas, but as you said, and I think we said last week, it's going to come down to the content. The price is right. I admire their aggressiveness. I've complained over the years many times about Rupert Murdoch. He has a lot of bizarre ways of doing things, and I think he's kind of been behind the times in a lot of ways, but this is really kind of forward thinking. So I'm glad somebody who sleeps on a bed of money could try something like this. And I think the app, they got it right, or at least are close to getting it right. And if the content can be good, then I think they're onto something. As we said last week, it is always going to be yesterday's news. We see news stories break on Twitter, then people are sharing the links. So to have this kind of magazine style thing that's once a day, it's going to be old news. So then the content has to be really good. But not everyone is a news geek like we are and want to set up RSS feeds, or some people don't even use Twitter and Facebook. So I think that's the biggest mistake that geeks make and then people in the tech press make. We assume that everybody thinks like us, and we ignore the fact that there's this big world out there, and our parents and grandparents, some of them, my dad still reads the paper every day. So if this can appeal to those people where they kind of get the new technology and save paper and feel it that way, but still have a regular kind of easy to navigate, here's sports, here's entertainment, I don't have to go searching to all these other websites, I think this has a chance of succeeding.
I mean, this is a very aggressive approach. Reports are out that they have spent $30 million. I mean, they have a dedicated team of writers out of New York. They have a New York office. But what was really interesting is how an unofficial table of contents has been set up on a Tumblr blog, which is The Daily Indexed, which is all of their stories indexed on a Tumblr page. And this was set up, I think it was set up almost like today or yesterday by Andy Bayo. He's a journalist and programmer. And basically, he's indexed the entire site. And he's letting The Daily know that if there's any sort of legal nightmares, he will take it down. But he also did post a video where I think it was The Daily team saying that, they are indexing their own stuff. And Google's actually also indexing all these articles too. So and search engines aren't blocked in their robots their text files, so it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, I saw the Tumblr page. It's awesome, by the way. If you're in Canada and you don't have access to the app yet, check out that Tumblr page, because as Gary said, all it is a list of links, and then it takes you over to the daily website. It's not like he's copied the articles or anything. And I'll be really impressed if the Daily doesn't do something. If they were smart, they would want this. This is just people wanting their content. I'm not going to get into a whole nother rant about that. We seem to bring this up every week, but people just want the content. You find a way to monetize it and let people view it. If I want to have it on my iPad or my iPhone or my Safari browser, or I want to print it out on my printer, you wrote the content for me to consume. Let me consume it and track the numbers accordingly, so you can get paid through ads or however you do it. It all comes down to how we monetize this stuff, because people wanting your content is a good thing. That's what kills me about the music and movie industry always trying to shut down sites and everything else. You're getting what you want. Didn't you produce this material to be consumed? So that's the part that always kills me. So if the Daily is cool with this guy's Tumblr, I'm even more impressed with them.
Yeah, I mean, the site's great for people who don't have access to the app. You can check out, you know, the style of writing, the variety of stories that they have. They have a lot of video. So it's interesting. Next up, we have a story that just won't go away, kind of like the Verizon story. And the Verizon story was almost willed into existence. And I think this next story is going to happen as well. Is the white iPhone going to be available soon? Steve Wozniak, he actually confirmed this in a video. There's been also other rumors that a white iPhone 4 could be available in the UK by the end of March, and possibly Canada next. I don't know. It's just, I know Woz has a modded iPhone 4 with a custom white back, and he actually purchased his white casing from that kid who was, you know, making a ton of money off this operation.
Yeah, I love Woz. He's like the co-founder of Apple, but then is basically like all of us. He goes and lines up at Apple stores for big events, and he supports all these different things and tries out new services and responds to people on Twitter and these different things. He's a really cool guy. I think the white iPhone is going to come out. As I've said all along, Apple doesn't screw things up. People have been saying, oh, it's never going to come out. They wouldn't keep adding it to their sites and saying it's coming soon if it wasn't. I don't know why earlier on they didn't get rid of it sooner and then just bring it back, but it'll come out and it'll sell surprisingly well. There will be people who have waited who want it, and there are even people who will go out there and sell their phones or do whatever it takes and get it. I know a lot of people really wanted it and were waiting. I had already decided before the iPhone 4 had even come out that I had a white 3GS and I was going to go back to black this time, so I was never concerned, but it will come out probably in the next couple months and will sell surprisingly well, even though a new phone is right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, the white iPhone looks neat, but I like the black iPhone. I don't know. The white iPhone kind of looks like a toy. That's just my opinion.
Well, the funny thing is, when I had my white 3GS, everybody loved it, but a lot of people would say, oh, but it's only white on the back. I don't like how it's black on the front. I kind of like that. As soon as they made the new one white on the front, to me, it just looked too much white. A white backplate, I think, actually looks kind of cool. The white on the front just changes the whole look of the phone for me. Like you said, I don't know if it's toyish or what bothers me about it, but just the elegance of the phone and the fonts and everything that we're used to seeing, something about that displayed on that white background to me just doesn't look as good. So, but there are people who like it, and they should have a chance to get it soon.
You know, speaking of what our iPhones look like, my iPhone 4 right now, I currently just put on the Photoroid skin. Infectious.com, they sent me a sample of this Photoroid Polaroid camera skin that you can apply to the back of your iPhone. I actually put that on and haven't had any crazy looks from people, but it does look really cool.
Cool, you'll have to post some pictures later.
Yeah, that's coming soon, so keep an eye on that. Other big news that happened this week, the Verizon iPhone. It It's been up for pre-order. Initial reviews have hit the web, and they're surprisingly good. There's no death grip, lack of drop calls. A lot of people have been able to have long calls, make calls from their office. MG Siegler from TechCrunch, a lot of the other big reviewers too, they were all able to make calls that they weren't able to make on their iPhone on the AT&T network. The notable feature that the Verizon iPhone has right now is personal hotspot, which turns your iPhone into a hotspot. Reviewers have been able to get 4 hours out of their iPhone by sharing it as a hotspot. And the rumor is that iOS 4.3 will be coming in 2 weeks, and that will bring personal hotspot, which will also coincide with the end of the free two-week trial that's part of the daily. And that will change up the way in-app subscriptions are going to be made on the on iOS.
Yeah, that's why I put the story in the lineup. I think everybody's kind of sick of hearing about the Verizon iPhone. Half of us are in Canada and we're on AT&T. There's only a small portion of people who really care about Verizon news. But that personal hotspot feature sounds really awesome. I haven't tried it yet. I've been tempted to download a beta, but I've resisted so far. So that's the big news, that the phone, now that it's coming out on the 10th, I think we will see it either days before or days after. I don't think Apple will allow two different iPhones to be out there long. They don't like to do that. So that's the big news, that the phone's almost out and we should have the new update soon. And it sounds like it's working in Canada in the latest beta, so that bodes well. Again, you never know with our carriers, but it looks like we're going to get it and may get it for free. And the fact that it works so good is really good. It's not like tethering is hard, but you got to switch stuff on and you kind of have to mess around with it just to be able to make a personal hotspot like that so easily and then have it last 4 hours. That's pretty amazing battery life to be using your phone and having it have other devices connected to it for four straight hours. That's a nice feature that a lot of people are going to be able to use.
Yeah, well, Rogers in Canada, they've already confirmed that if the feature is available in Canada, they will support it, as they do have other Android devices that do already support similar features such as personal hotspot. I know that the new iOS personal hotspot is now just, you know, it's right on the main settings menu. You don't need to dig through the menu to get to
That's nice.
The sharing, which is really nice. So that's something to look forward to. The rumor is it's coming really soon. Next up, this is usage-based billing for internet in Canada. This has been a huge story, and basically the big telcos here, specifically Bell, they want to move to a model where you are charged internet based on what you use, and overages will be charged by the gigabyte. Usage-based billing has basically taken over every tech story in Canada, and petitions have been formed at stopthemeter.ca, which has amassed, I think right now they have over 403,000 people have signed, and the number continues to grow. So I think that number has actually scared some of the federal politicians in charge, because even our prime minister, he got hands-on with this issue. The industry minister Tony Clement said he was going to overturn the CRTC's decision and make them explain this decision. So I mean, the battle is not over, but it's good news that the Liberals, the Green Party, and the NDP have all come out against internet metering. So there we go.
Yeah, and what I find really interesting, I got to try to organize my thoughts here, because this is a huge issue. It's not exactly iPhone related, but it's really important. Even for our U.S. listeners, it's been all over all the U.S. podcasts this week, because they're going to watch something like this. If it took hold in Canada, they might try it in other countries. And this couldn't be let to stand. And it looks like it's going to change now, but keep signing the petition. Don't let them off the hook. But it's funny how quickly things changed. You mentioned all those political parties. Well, the prime minister, whatever they're called now, the Conservative Party, he's flat out said if the minister and the board don't veto it, he will. So it's, we have now all the parties on board. And I think it's a little bit of a lesson for politics in Canada. In general, Canadians tend to be a little apathetic. We don't get riled up for most political issues. I don't think politics affects Canadians on a day-to-day basis like it does in some other countries. And I think because of that, our politicians and our businesses tend to take advantage of our good nature. But then as you see by this result, when we do get riled up, our politicians, again, I don't mean to be overly negative, but tend to be pretty gutless. They care far more about being elected than they do about any principles or anything else. So when you do make like a protest or you do let them know that you're not happy with this, you see how quickly this got taken down. So it's a good lesson for Canadians. We have to shed that good nature sometimes and go after these guys when they try to put in a policy that was this anti-consumer and that anti-competitive.
I mean, this online petition has really taken off. I think it has amassed the most signatures out of any online petition in Canadian history, which, I mean, we haven't had a lot of online petitions, but I mean, to get 400K, that's pretty amazing. But I mean, part of that is how easy it was to send emails through the website set up on stopthemeter.ca. So kudos to them for setting that up, actually based out of Vancouver.
Yeah, you need to organize these things. And the other thing I just point out is this issue, even if it's over or not over, basically stemmed from Bell's greed. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. So I don't think this petition is enough to stop. I know if I had a Bell service right now, I would be calling them up, canceling it, and making it known that I was canceling it for what they attempted to do here. I know I don't have to really argue against the point because I think there was like five guys in all of Canada who actually tried to support it. There's no justification for what they tried to do. And the funny thing is, I don't like that it's actually being classified as a usage-based billing. It's bigger than that. There's really nothing wrong with usage-based billing. If you use more, you should pay more. That's fine. This doesn't stop them from having a plan with 20 gigs. And then if I want an unlimited, of course, I'm going to pay more. The point was that you have all these independent sellers trying to make a business out there, but Bell owns the pipes, as they say, and then they're going to try to control it. I don't know if you saw that. We should post it on the blog. If you didn't, someone actually did a calculation, and the overages that Bell was proposing, it would actually be cheaper to buy a solid straight hard drive, fill it up, mail it across country overnight, shipping to somebody, and then take that data and throw it out. That would be cheaper per gigabyte than actually downloading it. So again, what's funny, if Bell had any brains in their head at all, they would have quietly raised everybody's internet a couple bucks. Where Canadians were easygoing, nobody would have cared. But they tried to get so ridiculous that it caused an outrage. And again, it shows how we all have to be careful, because don't ever let Bell trick you into thinking, or anybody else, that, oh, well, the internet's clogged or we have people hogging the internet. No study has ever shown that our bandwidth is under attack that way. Their marginal cost of delivering you an extra gigabyte of data is virtually zero. This is all about Bell wanting you to cancel Netflix, stop watching YouTube, and to consume their content. And again, that's the danger of the people providing the content being the same people who own the pipes. That's what we have to keep watching if we want to keep our internet freedoms in place.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, part of this infrastructure that has been set up, it has come at the expense of Canadian taxpayers that have been subsidizing these networks. Yes, you know, we have a large country. However, the majority of people, majority of the population lives, you know, along the border with the U.S. I mean, it's, you know, it's just, you know, I think the argument's kind of out the door now. I mean, these big telcos have been making like billions of dollars in profits, and, you know, for them to just complain and want more, I mean, you know, they see a way where they're going to lose money because the internet is changing the way we consume content. And like you said, you know, they'll do anything to try to keep those profits alive. I mean, just take a look at cell phone bills. 10 years ago, you know, did you expect cell phone prices to increase? I mean, people were talking about cell phone prices going down, but the opposite has happened. I mean, people are still being charged $5 to $8 for caller ID, which doesn't require anything on the end of these telcos to provide, and even text messaging too. So,
well, that's what I always tell everyone. I always tell people this story because I've always sort of been on the cutting edge of technology. Over 10 years ago now, it was ClearNet at the time, and they're gone now. I think they became TELUS, but I had unlimited internet on my phone back when you had this little 1-inch screen and you could only access these WAP sites. I remember I used to be able to access like PayPal and these different things, but it was unlimited internet for $5. But then that has gone up way higher now because they realized, oh, people actually want to use the internet now. You're right. The prices should be way down by now. But again, if you reported about the broadband prices, we have the highest around. Cell phone in Canada, one of the highest in the entire world. And that's just unacceptable. Yes, we have a big country and that has some trials and tribulations associated with it, but we cannot continue to let these guys charge us every month. And then when their infrastructure needs to be built back up, they say, hey, oh, we need to either crank our prices or we need the government to pay for this. What other businesses in the world can just keep taking all the profits? And as soon as they need to spend money on their own business, they expect us to cover it. They've made plenty and we have to hold them accountable. And that's why all these smaller guys popping up is good. It's just too bad they're rolling out so slow. Here in Ontario, we have Wind Mobile, and they have really excellent plans, but unfortunately really limited coverage. So hopefully those guys can keep rolling out and keep the big guys honest.
Yeah, I agree. But let's move on to some of the app news that we have lined up for you guys. Facebook Deals, now available in Canada for the iPhone. Basically, when you check into a business on Facebook, using Facebook Places, you can now get deals. I guess this is similar to Foursquare's, deals nearby for the mayor of like Starbucks. You get a free upsize for your drink. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how many people use this, but there are a lot of users of the Facebook iPhone app.
Well, this is a great thing because I've always been the kind of person who likes to get a deal. I mean, who doesn't? But a lot of people didn't want to clip coupons. There's the fact that it's a pain. You got to cut them out and save them and carry them around in your wallet, or you got to print them off. And it's just not ever been that convenient of a situation. But now I know there's not many in Canada yet for Foursquare. And now this Facebook, just to be able to kind of check in somewhere and then have this thing pop up. I know I used it at American Eagle one day, I checked in for fun and I was like, oh, there's a deal here. And it was like 15% off, which is not a small discount that you just show the person on your phone and they take 15% off your bill. So that's nice. The only thing I don't like about the Facebook and the Foursquare right now is they're limiting the deals to certain big partners. Once they open it up to everyone, then you can get all the local businesses involved and be able to use it more. That's the only thing I haven't liked about Canada. For some reason, they're letting everybody do deals in the US, but in Canada, I even created a page for a local business that I handle all their web stuff, and it wasn't open to everybody yet. So hopefully they open that up soon and then we can get more deals.
Yeah, it seems to be. Yeah, a lot of those deals, I mean, they seem to be US-based, and when it comes to Canada, it doesn't apply here kind of thing. But I mean, I guess with time, we'll see this change, but the coupon days are sort of over. I mean, now you look at Groupon, it's, you know, basically the same thing. It's like, it's the email marketing. It's basically, you know, the first thing that happens when you go to Groupon is a pop-up appears and they want your email and they'll just send you a deal every day. And people just get excited about getting deals, which, you know, I love them too.
Yeah.
Next up here, this is another story that continues to make headlines. Rovio, they've teamed up with 20th Century Fox, and they're coming out with a new version of Angry Birds called Angry Birds Rio, which is to help market this animated movie coming out called Rio. Angry Birds Seasons is actually getting an update, a Valentine's Day update, which will be coming soon. So Angry Birds, I mean, oh my goodness, everyone's playing this game. Even found out that my dad was playing this on his iPad, and he has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, it's Rovio's world, and we're all just living in it. It's unbelievable what this company's been able to do out of a simple little iPhone game. I don't know if you've seen they have a TV spot or a commercial with the Angry Birds and the birds from this Rio movie together, and it's really funny. And I don't know if Rovio approached Fox or Fox approached them, but whoever put this deal together is a genius, because it is a perfect tie-in. The people who are big fans of the movie, it's just going to bring more and more people to the game, and then it's going to make a huge, like, the millions and millions of people playing Angry Birds are going to instantly be aware of this movie, because, you know, as soon as there's a new Angry Birds game, which I'm sure will be free because it's this tie-in, everybody will download it. You'll have those characters from this new movie, and every kid in the world will be running up to their parents saying, oh, I want to go see the Angry Birds movie. And so it's a genius piece of marketing, and it's actually a good example of what we're always talking about, that you got to think outside the box. There's people love your content. There's going to be a way to make money. Fox is going to do well on this deal. Rovio is going to do well on this deal, all from a free app. So it just goes to show you, with a little creativity, you can monetize people loving your product. Stop fighting it and trying to put it behind paywalls. Just let your content out there and find a way to make money.
Yes, and another way that people can make money is through getting millions and millions of downloads, which leads us to our next story. We've talked about this app before, Viber, which is basically a voice over IP app. It's similar to WhatsApp, but for voice. It has now hit 10 million downloads, and that's only on the iPhone. And they're about to release an Android version of the app, which will surely lead to even more downloads too. I mean, I love Viber. It's crystal clear for making free calls. And yeah, I mean, it's really amazing. 10 million people.
I use Viber more than I do the built-in phone. Like, I use Viber more than I use my Rogers service. That tells you how good it is. Two interesting things. We have to pat ourselves on the back a little bit. I downloaded this the minute it hit, within minutes of it hitting the store. I told you about it. We tested it, and we're talking about it on the podcast within hours of it being released. So we were on top of this one early. And then again, to have 10 million, think about that for a second, 10 million users for a product that's had no outside advertising whatsoever and is only on one platform. It's not like it's Skype, was available on the desktop for years and then suddenly became available for the iPhone, or something like, I can't even remember that other one that was competing with Skype for a while that's sort of fallen by the wayside, but they had clients all over the place. This is simply an app that came to the App Store and then found 10 million users just from people signing up and then recommending it to their friends. I know when I sent an invite to everybody, which I normally don't do, and I kind of got the responses back, oh, Justin, how many of these apps do you recommend? Like, my phone's running out of room with all these things you send me. And I was like, right away, no, delete everything else I've sent. This is the way to do it. And now everybody uses it and loves it. So good for them. And speaking of making money, I don't know how they're making money because it's all free right now, but I guess they'll figure that out. 10 million happy users can't be bad for business.
Oh yeah, that's a great number for someone to look at when they want to buy your company. And the next big feature in Viber is free text messaging, and that's apparently coming this month, which will make the app even better. Let's move on to a couple app picks for this week. One app that I reviewed that I thought that was really cool, it's called Taxi Now. And basically what it is, it's an app for both cabbies to use and passengers to use. And it allows passengers to hail down a cab using their iPhone in real time. So basically you launch the app, you look on the map, and you can see cabs that are moving around the city. You just request a cab. And if a cab driver is also using Taxi Now, they'll get a push notification that there's a fare nearby, and they'll see your location on the map, and they'll come right to you. Taxi Now is based in Vancouver. There's a startup in Vancouver that created this. So I talked to the founder, and he's saying that they're doing some test runs back east as well, and so far the service has been really, really, really great. And the app's really easy to use, so this could be the future of calling a cab straight from your phone.
Yeah, I have no use for a taxi app, but I love hearing these things come out. That's such a genius way of doing it. Just like there's a startup in the U.S. right now who you can use your iPhone app to order food and things at sporting events. That you can just tell them where your seat is and they come down. But like anything, it depends on who's supporting it. So I hope something like this takes off, and it's a great idea. So if they can get both people and the taxi services using it, that's great. My first pick, I'll stick with the Canadian theme. This is another one from a Canadian developer, and it's called Smarter, and it's smarter without the E, just an R in the end. And what this does, it's actually pretty genius, but it's like everything, you kind of got to test it out to kind of really appreciate it. What you do is you enter your Twitter credentials and your Facebook credentials, and they have an algorithm that they're pretty proud of, that they go through all your tweets and all your Facebook messages, and they strip out all the spam, all the Foursquare check-ins, all the "I had this for breakfast today," and they just give you all the stuff that has, again, according to their algorithm, worthwhile content. So links to articles and things like that. So again, what I do is I consume Twitter as I normally would, just kind of scroll through it quickly. I want to hear about people's lunches and things like that, my friends. I use it the same way. But then I open up this app to then just quickly to be able to go through the articles and to have all that other stuff gone. And again, I like it because it's my new fascination with Twitter, these one-tap links. So you can just, you see, it says, like I say, I'm following Gary. It says, Gary Ng has followed this. It shows the article of what you're sharing. It has three or four sentences, so you can actually see a nice preview. And then you tap it, it's one link, and it pops up the story. And again, the real nice thing is, like the other apps we've talked about, like Instapaper and Reader and things like that, it makes a mobile phone version that's really easy to read. So say Gary's sharing a story from iPhone in Canada, you don't get inundated with all the ads and all that stuff that just doesn't work that well on the iPhone. You get right to a perfect white background, nice readable text, and can read the story right there in the app. So again, it's really great app. It's free, so there's no reason not to try it. They're a Canadian developer, and actually I'm hoping to set up an interview with them in the next few weeks that we'll share with you on the podcast, but I'm really impressed with the app so far.
Very cool. I'll have to definitely check that one out. Other apps that I'd like to talk about this week. I've had a fascination the past couple weeks about using RSS reader apps on the iPhone. Justin told me about Reader. I'd checked out Reader before, but I wasn't really into it. I was just getting my feeds the old school way. But so far, I've managed to test out Reader and mobile RSS. Both are phenomenal. Both have their own cosmetic differences. I started out with Reader. Now I'm using mobile RSS, the pro version, and I'm liking it a lot. Super easy to share articles, save them to Instapaper, you name it. Just little things, you know, to one button tap to read all. You can even have articles that are formatted in an easy way for you to read. So yeah, if you're trying to find a good RSS reader, definitely check out Reader or mobile RSS. Now, there has been some controversy with mobile RSS and Reader. The Reader developer, he feels that mobile RSS is actually sort of, I would say, copying or cloning some of the cosmetic features of Reader into mobile RSS. And there's actually a web page that's set up on the Reader blog or site that is a side-by-side comparison of both apps, and it's pretty interesting to take a look at.
Yeah, first off, I'll second your pick. I'm kind of the exact opposite of what you just described. Mobile RSS was my main RSS reader for the past 2 years. And when I say my main reader, I use that like an hour a day on the iPhone. That's how I consume all my news. That's what I do for fun. I follow all the entertainment stuff I like that way. And then, of course, I use it for preparing this podcast and blogging and that type of stuff. And then, again, even in my personal business with web design and everything, I follow people that way. So RSS is a huge part of my life. And I had been using mobile RSS every day up until a couple months ago when Reader kind of got up to the time speed-wise. I found that mobile RSS always was faster and had better services, and Reader was better looking. And now that Reader has taken kind of the performance issues, they were the best. But then, of course, now when you just mentioned mobile RSS, all but copied pixel per pixel their design. So now they're a toss-up. Gary noticed a couple little things about the way it handles folders. So it almost becomes a preference thing. But I think the moral of this whole story is both of these RSS apps, Instapaper that we talked about last week, Smarter, which I just mentioned, all these things run off a Google Reader account. So I know I've had people who it took me a long time to convince them to get into an RSS Reader account. It's a little work to set up, but I do recommend if you're really into tech or into geeky things, you like to follow websites, spend the time to start a free Google Reader account. Go to google.com/reader, I think it is, and sign up for the account, install the bookmarklet to easily add the sites you want. And if you really get into it and you curate a list of stuff you like, you'll never visit a web page again. Some of my favorite websites, I wouldn't even recognize them if I saw them now. I do it all through the RSS feed. And then again, you can access it from all these great different iPhone apps that just make the experience so much easier to read and so much quicker. So if you take anything out of all these recommendations, take the time and invest in setting up a Google Reader account. I don't think you'll regret it.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely worth it to get set up. It just makes, you know, getting your feeds a lot easier. Any other apps that you'd like to share this week?
Yeah, I guess we got a couple minutes. The other two, I'll kind of do two picks in one, kind of the two ends of the spectrum. I'm really into listening to music and streaming on my iPhone. I've done all kinds of recommendations for Last.fm and Slacker Radio and Pandora and all those. But then there's times you just want to listen to news or a sporting event or a talk show, whatever it is. And there's tons of radio apps. Since the day the iPhone was released, there's been just a ton of them. And it's been something they've done well. And I'm using two right now for people who are into that. There's one called TuneIn Radio that I recommend for most people. It's 99 cents out of all the radio apps. It's by far the easiest to use and the best looking. You just launch the app. There's a thing where you can search the show you want. Then you can bookmark it. You can even schedule recordings. The nice thing is it records in the background, so you can kind of use it as a PVR. So say you're listening to a sporting event or you're listening to a talk show, let it play for a couple minutes. I mean, like hit play, pause it for a couple minutes, and then you just hit play again and you fast forward through the commercials just like you would a PVR. So you can actually pause live radio, which is really nice. And it also supports a website called radiotime.com, which again, if you're into radio, is a nice little free website to use. What you do is you create an account with Radio Time. You then search all the different shows and stations you're interested in, bookmark them on that website, and then the app, just you put in your Radio Time credentials and it pulls in all the different things that you want to schedule. So if there's a certain talk show that you like that you just want to kind of be reminded when it's on or record certain times, it does the job really well. It supports a lot of stations. Most radio stations nowadays are supported with this app. So for 99 cents, I don't think you can go wrong. If you're really, really super geeky about radio, I use another one called OOTunes, which is OO Tunes. And it is ugly. I have to say, I love the guy who develops it, but it's a little bit ugly. But this app has everything. This app allows you, it records in the background automatically. It allows you to save the different recordings, title your recordings. If you use something like PhoneView on your Mac, you can even transfer the recordings onto your computer. It actually records in MP3, which I hope I'm not getting him in trouble because no other apps record in MP3. So I always assumed it was sort of against Apple's terms of service. So I hope I'm not letting something out here and I lose that great feature. But again, the U-Tunes, OO-Tunes has many more features. You sacrifice, it is a little, like I said, on the ugly side. It also supports more services. You can access things like Shoutcast. Our podcast is on there. There's just way more content, and I think it's $4.99. So again, if you're really into it, you sort of want the one app that'll do everything, then I recommend U-Tunes. But if you just want something really quick and simple and looks nice and it's lightweight, you can't beat TuneIn Radio for 99 cents. Those are my, I love them both. So pick which one, or if you're really geeky, you might want both, but both of them I stand behind. And it's something, like I said, I've been using radio apps on the iPhone from the day they came out. And you'd have a trouble saying, finding one that I haven't tried. So when I give these two recommendations, I can stand by them that I've tried them all and they're the two best.
I've given TuneIn Radio a try before, and it's actually really good. The amount of stations you can get, it's crazy. How would you compare that to one of the original radio apps, was it Wonder Radio?
Yeah, Wonder Radio, I haven't used in so long, but I'm sure if you already have Wonder Radio, then I don't think either of the ones I suggested you need to do. Wonder Radio was great at the time, and I just haven't followed its development. The big new things that you've seen in these radio apps over the last year or so is the background audio, which of course we take for granted now, but if you remember, it wasn't too long ago that you couldn't listen to streaming things in the background. So stuff like Wonder Radio and U-Tunes actually had these clever ways of sort of turning it into a Safari feed that you could run in the background. And then they introduced recording. So again, if you use Wonder Radio, I'm sure it's still good, but I can't comment too much because I haven't used it in a while. But both of these I've used hardcore, used both of them hours a day lately because I've been working on something night and day, and I've been just in the mood to kind of listen to something different. So I've tested the recording on both. And like I said, the U-Tunes, I hope I'm not getting them in trouble because it's nice to actually, there's a couple things that I actually kind of wanted to save, and I used my phone viewer to see if I could find them, and sure enough, they're saved in a folder as MP3s, which is nice. So both of them are great, depending what you need. If you just need something, TuneIn is so easy to use. It's a couple taps to everything, and it looks really nice. It's a really polished app that you could almost believe that Apple might have released themselves. The other one is kind of goofy looking, but gets the job done. It does everything.
Yeah. If we want to talk about radio apps again, AccuRadio is one of my favorite apps for just satellite radio instead of stations. It's they got great channels, great selections. So if anyone, if we're on the topic of satellite radio, AccuRadio is one of my favorite apps on the iPhone, and that's free too.
Yeah, I actually plan, I think I mentioned on the show and I've mentioned it to you, in the near future, I want to start doing some kind of themed shows where we concentrate on certain type of apps, and music and radio apps is going to be one of my favorite, one of my first that I want to do, where we just talk and compare a bunch of the different apps, and then I'm going to line up interviews. Most of these developers who've done these radio apps that we just mentioned, I've been in contact with them and they're interested in doing an interview, and they can kind of shed light on how they put in certain features and what features are important and what they're working on. So I always get a lot of feedback on the music and radio type apps. So in a future episode, not too distant future, we'll probably dig into it even deeper and find some more of these hidden gems. But both of those are good, and Gary likes those other two. So now you have lots of choice if you want to get into some live sports or talk radio, or just unbelievable. You won't believe it when you search a topic. There's also old radio shows that people have archived, radio plays. There's just, once you get one of these apps, you could just never be short of just endless free content.
We could talk forever about this stuff. I mean, you can even talk about the CBC Radio app if you want to listen to CBC Radio. So anyways, I think this episode of the iPhone Podcast, episode 25, we've talked about many topics and some app reviews. Hopefully you enjoy some of those recommendations. Thanks again for listening to the iPhone Podcast. Please rate us on iTunes. Your current ratings are really worthwhile to us, and we ask you to rate us on iTunes. Anything good you want to say, bad you want to say, any feedback, we're all ears. You can follow the show and provide feedback by checking out the iPhonePodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I am located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and Justin is at twitter.com/JustinLouie. That's LUEY. So thanks for listening, and we will see you guys again next week.
Yeah, thanks everybody. And I just want to quickly say the iTunes ratings do mean a lot. I found out recently that your ratings and your appearance in the charts is completely, we're not completely, but heavily weighted by the current ratings. So it really helps us out. If you write a review, that's even better. But even just giving us a basic rating helps. Last week we mentioned it and a bunch of people did it. I'm even going to mention, because I wrote them down because I was so happy that people took the time to do that. We got great reviews from Crafty Girl, James Gibbs, Love Watt, Jeff Pro, and Marco. Thank you guys so much for doing that. And anybody else who wants to put in a review, I really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. Thanks again.